Welcome back to the McAdoo Studios. Still hanging out with the guys from TechSideline.com, Chris Coleman, Will Stewart. Follow them on Twitter at ChrisColemanTSL and at WillStewartTSL. They're with us for the entirety of Hour 2, so stick around. Don't forget, coming up later this evening, 6:50 pregame, 7 o'clock first pitch, Pulaski Yankees and Elizabethton Twins. Game 2 coming up tonight. Last night, the Yankees stormed back in the 7th to take Game 1 4-2, and they're now winners of 7 straight, 14 games over 500, and look to be on track for postseason baseball and look to be the best team, quite honestly, in the Appalachian League. Could be the Appalachian League's champion when it's all said and done in the first year of Yankees affiliation.
You're kidding.
It's incredible.
I went to their opening game. They looked terrible.
Awful.
So many errors.
Awful.
They just looked like they had never been on a baseball field before.
Awful. They just looked terrible in the first week. But, yeah, best team in the league.
Yeah.
And they've been a joy to watch, I think. A couple of late-season call-ups, you know, a couple of bullpen arms, which may or may not come back to bite them. But what they've got hanging around in that bullpen is still pretty darn good. And the offense, top to bottom, 1-9. They can hit for average. They hit for power. It's something else to see.
They spent a lot of money the last few years on foreign prospects.
They have.
And some of those guys are making their way up through Pulaski right now.
Yep.
And that's a fun thing about the early, the lower minor league levels, is seeing these guys come through for the first time.
Very cool parts of it for me has been, you know, you mentioned the international free agent signees, and I've said this a lot during the broadcast, because in those broadcasts we have a very mixed audience, right? We have folks listening locally, but we have a lot of parents and friends and family members listening across the country, maybe, you know, elsewhere in the world. So I try to treat the broadcast that way. And Hoijun Park, who is the shortstop for the Yankees, signed for $1.16 million with the Yanks, I think, late last fall or early this spring, and he was the first ever Korean international signee in the Yankees organization's history.
You're kidding.
Ever. I would have never guessed that, because there have been some pretty good Korean players in Major League Baseball.
Is he playing shortstop for him?
Yeah, sure
That's
is.
That's what I thought.
Sure
yeah.
is. And he's an interesting prospect, not to get off on a tangent here, but he looks small when you're watching him in the stands, but he's actually about 6'1", 6'1 and a half, about $190, $180, something like that. He's got a good frame for putting on weight, so really young, 18 years old. They like what they've got there. It's a really really interesting setup and a really interesting organization. You got Mike Cameron's son, Daz,
first
37th overall pick playing in the Greenville club. So some really good players in this league. Really.
Yeah, there are.
The fifth overall draft pick, as a matter of fact, Kyle Tucker, is still playing in Greenville right now.
Oh, wow.
You had Xander Wheel, who was part of those Vanderbilt teams. He played last night for the Elizabethan Twins, and he was playing right next to Virginia Tech's own Alex Perez last night.
Wow.
So, you know, very, very cool. Virginia Tech's Iron Man, Alex Perez, didn't miss a game in his college career.
The Braves just brought up two of their first-round picks from this past year to Danville.
Yeah.
Also, Mike Soroka, he's a pitcher, and then Austin Riley, their third baseman. And Riley hit like 8 home runs in 2 weeks in the Gulf Coast League. So they brought him up to Danville, and he's been raking in Danville.
Uh-huh.
And they could have their number one overall pick in Danville by the end of the year, too. So, you're right. There's a lot of talent in the Appalachian League this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So what time are the games tonight and tomorrow night?
It should be 7 o'clock start times all the way through. It's 5 more in a row. The final 6-game homestand started last night. So 6 in a row at home. They got 7 in a row on the road to finish up the regular season. And assuming they stay in, you know, as one of the top 2 teams in the Eastern Division, they'll be playing postseason baseball once that's finished. So should be a good night, or a good rest of the season.
So how many fans are still coming to the games? Is it still 1,500?
They're back and forth with Greenville. Average has been about 16 to 1,700.
Wow.
And they've been trading back and forth between one team being first in overall attendance, the other one being first in average attendance, going back and forth with that. But suffice it to say, Greenville and Pulaski are by far leading the league in attendance. And that's not surprising, given that those two clubs have the nicest stadiums in the league.
No shock.
And
where they're located.
Right. And that was one of the things that Lee Landers, the Appy League's commissioner, he came and sat in the booth with me one night a couple weeks ago and called, I think, an inning and a half, and he talked about that he told, basically, there's sort of a mandate out in the Appy League right now. They're looking to expand, and he's telling all the current clubs, like, look, this is professional baseball. You need to treat it as such.
Yeah.
And that Pulaski and Greenville have sort of set the standard. Now, to be fair, Greenville plays at Tusculum College, you know, so it's a dual-purpose stadium. But still, they're setting the standard right now.
Danville's stadium is not near a residential area. It's in Dan Daniel Park right there by the river, but that was really their only choice. I mean, if they put it anywhere in the city of Danville, then any fan going to the game would take a chance on getting shot by one of Danville's marauding gangs that run around the city. I mean, it's just a terrible city right now.
I don't know the city very well.
I grew up there.
Yeah.
It's not pleasant.
That's tough to hear. I don't like that. I still haven't been to Dan Daniels Park. Didn't it used to be in North Carolina?
No.
I was reading the wiki page one day, and I thought I saw that.
No.
Maybe the wiki page is wrong.
It's very close. Danville's right on the border.
Hmm. What do you got? You just tapping that mic?
Well, I got nothing. I grew up in Charlottesville and went to Albemarle High School, and GW Danville was in our district. It was a 3A district at the time.
Uh-huh.
Man, they used to beat us in football 60 to nothing, and that was with their backups.
Man, those Southside teams used to be just unbelievable.
Oh, they won some state championships back then. GW was nasty.
EC Glass had some incredible teams.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. There were some great teams down south. And there's still some good teams there, don't get me wrong. But, man, I know what you're talking about. Some of those older Southside teams.
Those big AAA teams were just nuts. EC Glass and GW, they were two of the two main ones.
Yeah, those were some really good football teams. All right, let's talk some Virginia Tech news and notes. I don't know what the starting positions seem pretty well solidified at this point outside of Rover, right? I mean, what they're concerned with right now is establishing depth, you know, in the two deep, and that second string around the board is the gist that I get.
I think so, and I think even the Rover battle is pretty much done.
Des?
I mean, if they're working Donovan Riley at cornerback now, and Adonis Alexander's the backup Rover, then that's done because they're not going to start a true freshman at Rover.
Right. So it's Des Fry's job.
I think it's Des Fry's job, and he would have to lose it at this point.
Now, how big is he? What's his height and weight?
6'2", 205.
I love it. He knows it right off the top of his
head. I think that's right. I can't guarantee. Yeah,
roughly. Close enough.
He is a big safety.
So Chuck Clark's at free safety, right?
That's right.
Okay.
He's a big guy.
All right.
Des Fry is a big – he is a big guy.
He's a big guy.
Of course, we've seen him in the interview sessions, but I saw him walking his dog the other day, and it took me a second because – it can be tough when most of these players are out there wearing helmets usually when you're interviewing.
Why aren't you wearing 26 around when you're walking your dog, Des Fry, so we can recognize
you? And I'm looking at you, I'm like, I'm pretty sure you're Des Fry, but I can't remember to be. But then, again, I did a little quick iPhone, just to double check it. Hey, big guy.
Yeah.
Big guy, 6'2", 205. And he's a looming presence running around back there.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And he's got some experience on defense. He played a little bit there as a true freshman. I remember he came in the game against Alabama when Kyshawn Jarrett got hurt, gave up that deep touchdown pass. I think he's a little bit of a question mark in coverage because he's so big, but with that size, he should be good in run support.
Yeah, should be. So again, it sounds like it's more about padding the depth, and I know the offensive line is the one place where that is of the utmost concern.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing names, Parker Osterloh is going to play. Yashua Nijman's going to play, which is, man, that's...
He's going to play.
Yeah.
Will he actually play? Yeah. Play. Will he play a meaningful down? Yeah. Depends on injury. I think Osterloh will. He's their sixth guy right now, and it sounds like if anybody except the center got hurt, Osterloh would go in.
It's a utility man. It's a nice thing to have, obviously.
It's a nice thing to have.
It's a great thing to have. What about Austin Smith?
Just not physical enough.
You know, it's funny. You bring up Austin Smith, and I remember the first time they moved him over from defense to offense, and they tried him out in practice. And I remember the interview with Scott Loeffler after that day's practice. And Loeffler said, wow, he's got some moves. He said, some guys, you look at him, and you're like, other guys, you turn on the tape, and you just go, wow. And Austin Smith's one of those guys. It's all been all downhill since then. Scott was really blown away with him the first day for whatever reason, and, it just hasn't happened.
More of a fit for the Jeff Grimes system, I think.
Really?
Those outside zone plays where you go get angles on the defensive lineman rather than driving them off the line of scrimmage.
Sure.
I don't think he's the most physical guy in the world. You watch him in there against UNC last year, and UNC had a bad defensive line, and he was getting blown 2 and 3 yards into the backfield a couple of times there. So
yep.
I just don't think he's physical enough at the point of attack. Now, he's still got another year after this one. It could happen. But
Who else can play? That's not reassuring.
Maybe Kyle Chung if he's healthy.
Yeah, if he's healthy. Except the shoulder issues.
Yeah. The depth's a big issue this year.
Boy, if the center gets hurt, this could go downhill really quickly.
Last year's team was good enough to beat Ohio State, but they were also young enough and they lacked the depth that if they had an injury or two, they were towing a very thin line.
Sure.
This year's team, it's not quite as bad, but it's kind of the same way. I mean, if Eric Gallo gets hurt at center and Kyle Chung's never healthy, then you're talking about putting Tyrell Smith in there as a true freshman center.
Ooh.
And honestly,
I don't know a ton about offensive line, but I've watched Tyrell Smith during scrimmages, and he's just not ready.
No, he's not ready yet. He's a good prospect, but he's not ready.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Yashua Nijman might be your third offensive tackle or maybe your fourth because technically Osterloh can play both. And Nijman's a guy who didn't even play offensive line in prep school and only got switched to offensive line halfway through the spring. So you're talking about a true freshman who prepped. This guy hasn't played offensive line since he was in high school in 2013. and he might have to help us this year as a true freshman.
He's not even really physically ready. He's got a great frame, but you get above the belt line, and you can tell that he needs to be stuck back in the oven and baked a little longer, puffed up a little bit more. He'll get there. Like I say, he's got a great frame, and they really like him, talking about Nijman. But, yeah, he's not ready yet.
Same thing with Tyrell Smith, though, right? I mean, the idea is that this kid's got a good frame to put on some more weight.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's a developmental process, but it's again, and this isn't just Virginia Tech. I mean, this is football teams across the country. You know, fingers crossed, no injuries. If we can avoid the big injuries, we're going to be just fine. You know, there are 25, 30 teams in the country saying the exact same thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Virginia Tech did not, when they flipped that luck coin at the beginning of last year, it didn't exactly come up heads for Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have good luck last season. Maybe they will this year. They're due.
Not every team in the country is Alabama deep,
no.
or LSU deep. No, not it's tough to be that.
And one of the coaches, I can't remember which one, made a point the other day. He said that Virginia Tech played a great game against Ohio State in the first game of the season, but they were doing it with a bunch of 18-year-olds, and it took its toll.
Well, Loeffler said that, he said, you know, we paid for it dearly. And he's exactly right, because Brewer didn't look like the same guy the next week. The offensive lineman didn't look like the same guy the next week. I mean, Caleb Ferris, for instance, last year, who played really well against Ohio State, that following week against Terry Williams was just routinely drone, I mean, backwards, you know, 15 feet off the ball. It just didn't look like the same group. And I thought Loeffler was exactly right. They paid for it dearly. And what else I thought was interesting was that David Teal asked him, and I talked to David about this yesterday. I said, you just point blank asked him, you guys think you can be really good this year, don't you? And he said, and Scott just looked at him and said, I don't know the exact wording, but he said,
We've got a chance.
He said like three times in a row. You know, he's so excited about these guys. He thinks they've got a chance to be really, really good, but he just won't come out and say it.
Well, it's like when you and Andy went over this the other day when he was asked about Trayvon McMillan, and he said, good player.
Yeah, I asked him.
I repeated it two more times.
Yeah. I got less than six words out of him when I asked him that. I was like, does he hate me or the question, or did he just not want to talk about it?
Yeah, it's like the Tech offense. Like, I really want to hype it up because I do think if they can stay healthy, I like the starters on the offensive line. I like the progress Brewer has made. Love those top two receivers plus Bucky and Malik. If the backfield gets handled correctly, I really like the potential of this offense. But if they have the wrong injuries at the wrong spots, they can also be pretty bad.
Yep.
So I don't want to start hyping them up, but when I don't know if there's going to be injuries, then I'll just look stupid for saying that they're going to be really good. So that's why Loeffler's not tipping his hand.
He's
too
doing
much
the same
either.
Thing.
He's doing the same thing. He doesn't want to step in it. And you got to respect that. You have to understand that too. All right, one more segment with Chris Coleman and Will Stewart of TechSideline.com. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.